We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time.
And welcome to the podcast. That's about as exciting I'm going to be in this podcast. The last vision I have of the New Orleans Pelicans is a score of 143-114. Brooklyn's beating them at home, it was in New Orleans, and Brooklyn now, with that win, has 9 wins on the season.
Mm.
9. And I honestly think that is the highest point total scored. If it's not, it's one of the top three in scored this season by Brooklyn. Can you name... Other than Brook Lopez, can you name any of the starters from that Brooklyn team?
The immortal Randy Foy is the only one that really comes to mind.
Yeah, because, I mean, they were missing, like, half their team. Kilpatrick wasn't there. Booker wasn't there. So there was Joe Harris. That was one. Justin Hamilton, who was a Pelican at one time.
And is the subject of one of the hottest plays on Broadway.
That's not Justin Hamilton.
No?
No, his first name's not Justin.
Oh, okay. Spoiler alert.
Dinwiddie. Is it Spencer Dinwiddie? It's S. Dinwiddie. Who cares what his first name is? He's a Dinwiddie.
Mm.
And Bogdan Bogdanovich. That was their starting five.
Yeah. Yeah, but we didn't have Quincy Pondexter.
That's true.
If we would have had Quincy Ponce, it always comes down to that. We're just not healthy. And that was the reason the Pels lost this game. If they would have had Quincy Pondexter, they would have been fine.
So our starting small forward, guess how many rebounds he got?
I'm going to go with one.
No, you're wrong. Zero. No. Rebounds. 23 minutes, zero rebounds.
Yeah, not many to get when... keeps making shots.
Or when the other team is grabbing them all. They wanted it, so just let them have it.
Yeah, it was bad, and I mean, they beat Brooklyn, what, a week before that?
Yeah.
And it looked like, it was 104-95. It looks like a game, if you just see the score, that they handily won. Brooklyn was up by 3 with about 2 minutes to go in that game.
Yeah.
So the Pelicans could have easily dropped both games to Brooklyn, you know, and they split the season series with them and have a point differential of, what is that? I can't even do the quick math. -20 points.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's just, it's all-time embarrassing, and it's games like that. Like, if people have any semblance of, I mean, I could see this franchise giving itself excuses when players were hurt, or this guy was this, or they hadn't learned this system yet, or this thing, or that, whatever. Like, this was a fully healthy team, pretty much, going up against the worst team in the NBA at home, and they just get utterly destroyed. Like, any illusion that anybody in this franchise had, like, no logical person could possibly still believe that this is a team worth saving in the short term, can they?
No, I would hope not. Here is the best line that I've heard from a podcast in the last, like, week and a half. Was Zach Lowe, and he just very briefly touched on the bottom of the Western Conference and or the Western Conference playoffs, and one of these teams is going to. And he goes, and just, you know, it doesn't matter. Like, if you win the eighth seed and you're 10 games under 500, it doesn't matter you won the eighth seed. You stink. Your team stinks, and you should consider your team as stinky. Like, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Our team will stink, even if it takes the eighth seed.
Yeah, but then what he said after that was exactly true, and what all these people do is they just think of the playoffs as the playoffs and not how you got into the playoffs or where you are. Like, whoever gets the eighth seed in the West is going to be much closer to being to the worst team in the West than they are seventh. Like, that's how it is right now, and it's not even close.
Yeah.
Like, whoever is the eighth seed, when you really think about yourself, you should think about yourself as a team that's much closer to being dead last than even seventh. And seventh is going to get the, you know, they're going to get the floor wiped with themselves. I mean, the seventh place team, the sixth place team are going to get killed, and you're not even close to them. So I don't get it. I know it's a couple of million dollars in added revenue, maybe if you get there, but I just, what was it by last turn? It's like $2.5 million. There's better. I mean, you know, buy out Alexei Ajinsa. Like, you could make your $2.5 million back that way. I mean, there's other ways. Sell a guy like you did last year to the Miami Heat, last year the Miami Heat gave them somebody and the Pelicans got cash for their troubles.
Yep.
Do that if you want to make a couple of $1 million if you're just penny pinching like that. But going all out for the playoffs just to get destroyed and not even be good, not even be on the way up, like I don't get it. Not for the Pelicans. I could see it being a positive for somebody like Minnesota or Denver, who already has so many young guys. The last thing they need is another young guy. Like, the experience could be good for them. I have no idea why a team like the Pelicans, you know, would have any desire to make the playoffs if they had rational people running the ship.
So when they went, they had that 4-0 streak. If they had gone 2-2, you realize they would be tied for last in the Western Conference for number of wins.
Yeah, I mean, they're close right now. If they really went all in on the tank train, they could easily get there. I mean, the Maverick right now, teams like the Mavericks and Philly would destroy the Pelicans in a 7-game series. I have no doubt in my mind. I know Philly would, and Dallas, since Dirk came back and Barea came back, they're playing quality basketball. Like, Phoenix has beaten Toronto. They beat somebody else the other night that was surprising. But they're winning games now. I mean, honestly, the worst team looks like the Lakers, and they'll probably tank because of their incentive to. But yeah, I mean, if the Pelicans really threw in the towel now, we could easily be talking about a top 3, top 5 pick.
Yeah, it's true. They're not going to.
I know, but maybe the – maybe the schedule, maybe they could keep trying and do it automatically, because I'll read off to you these next seven games, and you tell me the most likely record.
Okay.
So we've got Cleveland at home, OKC at home, San Antonio at home, Washington is playing well at home, at Toronto, and then probably their easiest game, but it's a second night of a back-to-back, at Detroit, and then at Washington. So if they play that 100 times and then we average out the results, what is their average record over that seven-game span?
Their average record is probably 1-6.
So if they go 1-6, they're 18-33.
Mm-hmm.
With 31 games left, I mean, 18-33, let's say that, you know, all the other teams right around them keep on their regular pace. They're probably at that point four and a half games out of eighth, even though they're 18-33. And then after that, really what they have is six games before the long All-Star break and the trade deadline. Like, I will venture to say that these 13 games here are probably the 13 most important games of what determines the AD era. Because if they go something like 2-11, like, I know we're pessimistic and we know that these guys won't sell, but if they go something like 2-11, would that give you any hope that this franchise would actually face reality? Or even then, you're not believing that they're going to be?
I think 2-11, they'll face reality. I just don't know what they're going to sell at that point. Like, what do they have that's going to get them good draft picks back?
No, I don't think good draft picks. I think that's gone.
Yeah. So let me fire this off at you, because I was trying to think through this the other day, and I want to run through the teams in the league, and you tell me which ones you think would actually likely to be a buyer. And I don't mean like they're going to go out and like pick up a fringe player who may or may not help them. I mean someone who's going to actually spend assets to get a real basketball player on their team because they think that will help them win a championship, or even maybe they're just reach their goal. Because like Sacramento Kings, we'll do them real quick. Sacramento Kings, I feel, would be buyers right now. Do you disagree with that?
They would be, but they really can't buy because of all the protection on their pick.
Right. But you know, maybe if you can go to them and if you can take McLemore and something back from them for like salary matching, and you give them something that they feel will help them. You could possibly do that. There's a chance that they are looking to bring somebody in because they still have playoffs as their number one end all be all goal. They must be in the playoffs. That's their dictate. And so, but there, I don't think there's a lot of teams that are like that. I think a lot of these teams, they're kind of where they should be, and probably most of them feel that way. So I kind of wanted to rattle through them and get your take on how many teams you think would actually, you could maybe get an asset out of if you put something decent on the table, like, say, Drew Holiday. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. Cleveland Cavaliers. Think they're buying anything?
I think if it wasn't for stupid NBA trade rules and they have assets, they would happily take. Sorry, this is the Artisan Painter. I'm trying to get to my Basketball Insiders page to look at salaries. And this Artisan Painter, and now this clip is going, geez, everything's with the pop-ups nowadays. Okay, forget that. That ain't happening.
they don't have a ton of assets to trade right now.
They don't have a ton of assets, and they don't really have contracts to match.
Not anymore.
To get the assets, so no. But I know that they would love Tyreek.
Right.
Just no way to get him.
Okay. So I would put Cavaliers in the no, right?
Yeah.
Raptors, you think they're buying?
Okay. But they're in a tough place because they're going to have to pay Lowry soon, and they already gave DeRozan a massive contract. So they want to buy, but they can't buy a guy who's going to need a huge salary soon or has a huge salary already. So.
They're going to be in the enviable position that if they Max Lowry like they're probably going to have to. They're going to have three guys on their team combining for something like $75 million.
Yeah, I think they trade. I think the second that they sign Lowry or before then, they've already traded
Valanciunas.
No, Jamari Carroll.
Okay.
He won't be on the team if Lowry gets paid. That's my prediction.
Okay. Are Celtics buyers?
Yes, but only for a superstar. They're like a better version of us. They don't need another B player.
Right.
They will trade if they could get an A guy, but they are stocked full of B guys.
Atlanta Hawks.
Doubtful. No, they either sell or stand pat.
Right. Washington Wizards.
Yes. I think that they would buy specifically a big man if a good one came along.
Okay. Well, that puts us out.
Exactly.
The Hornets.
No.
No. I think they're right where they expect to be. And, again, unless you're putting something amazing on the table, I think they're fine. The Pacers.
Actually, yeah, I think if they could get rid of Monta Ellis, and then I think it also would depend on their talks with Teague. I mean, he's going to be a free agent. Is he coming back? So I think in the right situation, they could get a guard, especially if that guard excites Paul George, because the number one thing they have to do this offseason is re-sign him, you know, extend him to a new contract. So I think if they could find the right guard to excite Paul George, they would do that.
The Bulls?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, Dwayne Wade already came out and said that, you know, if they trade Jimmy Butler, it might as well be gone. He came there to win. So, yeah, I think if they got an opportunity to upgrade, and they have a lot of nice tiny assets and future assets, so, yeah, I think they would buy.
The Pistons.
Based
on Stan Van Gundy's rant, all of his players are available. You just have to make the right offer.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he definitely likes doing stuff, and he's kind of, they're stagnant. They're not going anywhere, so he seems like the type that would shake things up. I really wonder, like, I'm really curious to see if Andre Drummond makes it through that contract. Because he is really plateaued and leveled off, and he restricts a lot of things that they could do, and he hasn't grown at all offensively. Like, I would worry if I was them that if he does this for another year or two, he just keeps going down. I think if you put him on the market right now, people will remember, you know, what he was or see the potential. I think you could get a lot for him. I would seriously consider trading him now if I was Detroit.
Yeah, we could talk about Andre Drummond some other time, but I have always felt that, you know, back like in the 90s, there was that slew of awesome centers, like, you know, Ewing and Olajuwon and David Robinson. There's like just a whole bunch of them, and kind of lost in the mix was Dikembe Mutombo, who was an amazing defensive force who impacted games. It always feels to me like Andre Drummond is that dude. Like, he's not going to be a franchise-changing offensive force who can also defend at an amazing level. He's just, like, the really good guy that just doesn't quite cut it.
But, yeah, I don't know. I struggle to figure out how you would get a team. You would have a team that would be a contender with him as one of your main two or three guys, which he would have to be with that salary.
Oh, he could be a DeAndre Jordan role guy on a. If you swapped him with DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin and Chris Paul were healthy, do you think that team suffers dramatically?
I think they're worse, but dramatically, no.
Do you think? Okay.
Yeah, anyway, DeAndre Jordan.
I don't think Andre's quite as good of a defender as DeAndre's turned into. So.
Yeah, and DeAndre Jordan's smart, and he's, I mean, even in these games where Paul and Blake aren't playing, Like, I know it's the narrative to say that he's completely set up by them. He is amazing in some of these games without either of them. He's really taken a step up. But, yeah, I mean, theoretically I could see that, but look what you're saying. I have to have maybe one of the three best point guards of all time and then one of the best, if not the best, passing outside of Draymond Green, I guess, power forwards in the NBA. So
You just made Jokic cry in Denver.
Oh, give me a break. He's a center anyway nowadays. All right, who else we got?
How about the Knicks?
I think yes.
The Knicks would be buyers, wouldn't they?
I think they would buy. If you scared them enough to make them think that other teams could sign Jrue Holiday in the offseason, I think they would give you a little something to get him there with his brother, wine and dine him, and then have the be in the driver's seat to re-sign him.
They have their own pick?
Yeah, might be a little too much, but
I don't know. Yeah. If you have Jrue Holiday there with Carmelo Anthony and Porzingis, you're going to win everything, man.
Porzingad. Yeah.
Orlando Magic, they're definitely buyers, aren't they?
I think so. There's the term buyers and sellers.
Mm-hmm.
What would be the... So buyers usually means that you'll give up, you know, future stuff for win now stuff, and sellers means the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're like a cross lateral where they'll give you stuff that could help you win now, you know, or make your team better now. Like, they're kind of an old school trade where all the trades now seem to be buyer and seller trades. But the old school trades, like in the early 90s, used to be, like,
trades.
Think about this one, like the Scottie Pippen for Sean Kemp trade that almost went down and that the Bulls offered. That wasn't a buyer or seller trade. It was, here, this guy could help you out and that guy could help you out and just change the way. So I think Orlando's that, where they're not a buyer or a seller. They're a whatever it is I'm describing.
So basically they're doing a fit trade.
Okay, if that's what you want to call it, yeah, fit trade.
Yeah.
They're fitters.
Okay.
They fit it in.
76ers.
Buyers.
Miami Heat?
Sellers.
Yeah. And the Brooklyn Nets?
D-League off-cast that somehow beat our butt. I would say sellers, but the only thing they could probably sell is Lopez, and I really think they just like him, and I don't know if they're going to sell him.
Okay.
But more likely to be sellers.
I agree. I think they're probably more – I mean, don't get me wrong. If you offer them talent that is locked down to a contract, they're taking it. But they're not going out of their way to bring in anybody who's going to – bend their flexibility the wrong direction in the upcoming couple of years.
Yeah.
All right. So, and this is kind of what I got too. Like the Eastern Conference, people feel like it's wide open. But do you actually feel that way? Do you feel the Cleveland Cavaliers are really honestly threatened by any of these teams?
No, but again, you're going with the idea that it's championship or bust. Like, people have different incentives and different goals. I think that every single team in that conference knows that Cleveland is winning the Eastern Conference this year, but can you get the fan base a little bit more excited? Can you get Dwayne Wade or Paul George a little bit more excited and coerce them to stay around even longer? Like, the goal isn't just championship or bust. Like, that's an unrealistic goal. When there's 30 of anything, you know, 30 restaurants, only one could be best restaurant. Like, you've got to have other goals. So I think there are buyers, but for totally different reasons than trying to win the Eastern Conference.
So here's what I would actually say about all those teams in the Eastern Conference. I think all of them, except for maybe the Raptors and Celtics, entertain dreams that they have a puncher's chance against the Cavaliers. Maybe they do. I don't know. But what I would say is, in the Eastern Conference, there is the Cavaliers, and you get to be the guy in the conference finals,
possibly against them. And that does mean something. Like, to have, if you, like, we've never seen the Hornets Pelicans make it to the conference finals. That stuff does matter. Like, I remember fondly the 2007 Hornets because of how far they went, and they almost made it to the conference finals. Even if my team made it to the conference finals and had their ass kicked all over the place by the Cavaliers, I'm still going to be like, I had a pretty fun team to watch. It was a really good team, and it made it to the conference finals. And yeah, it went up against one of the greatest players and teams of all time, so they lost, whatever. At least I have that. So I think all of these guys feel like they could easily be that person. So I thought, when I went down the list in the Eastern Conference, I came up with a big group of teams here, just like we just did. I'll see when I went down the Western Conference, I didn't come up with that. So I'm interested to see what you think about this Western Conference. So Golden State Warriors, they're not doing anything. Like,
no, I'd be foolish. Yeah.
They're do you realize that if they just do exactly what they've just done, they're going to win 71 win games again?
I still don't understand how they ever lose a game. Like, I know we look at 82 as a broad thing, but just every single game and an individual wrapper, fun size candy bar, they should win every single game they play. Every one.
Yeah, there's always outliers in everything. And basketball, when you talk about a margin differential of even the best teams of only being like 13 points, that just means that the other team has to get lucky on 11 shots, or not even 11 shots, on 6 shots to make it up, because you're going to have a couple 3-pointers in there. So just get lucky 6 times.
And then also do everything else good enough to have you stay within 13 points of Golden State, because I, like the Magic game they played today, like they jogged through the first half and then all of a sudden beat the Magic by like 20 in the third quarter and the game's over. Like,
yeah, but on average, teams actually do stay within 13. Just on average, that's what the number means. So average, people stay
Golden
within 13.
Golden State is jogging, but I'm saying that's because they're jogging.
Okay.
To me, like, if they had to play a 12-minute quarter and their life depended on it, I don't care who the team is, they would beat that team by 10. And then if they did that every time, like, I really think that they could easily beat teams by 30 or 40 if they just went all out all the time. So
against some teams, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would say every team. Anyways, no. But the Warriors are not buyers.
No.
Spurs.
I think they could in the right situation.
You think that they would spend assets to get a guy to help them this season?
I mean, look at them.
Like, it'd have to be a superstar, wouldn't it? They'd make them even consider it.
I mean, look at how easy it is for them to make a Jonathan Simmons or a David Bertrands or even I saw the other night DeJounte Murray just started out of nowhere. They just put him in because whatever, they sat and rested some other guys. And of course he comes in and scores 24 points and, you know, and I just think that they think that they could do that with whoever. So yeah, I mean, if they've got a chance to go get a Drew Holiday and it costs them a DeJounte Murray who they picked 29th or even a Jonathan Simmons who they got from nowhere. Yeah, they could go and develop those guys again anytime, or Patty Mill. Like, yeah, they'll go get another one. So yeah, go get a guy who's a little harder to get and then just develop the next Patty Mills or DeJounte Murray.
Hmm. Okay. Rockets.
I mean, first of all, do you think, let's say that they outgoes, let's say guys who are not super key to their rotation, and in comes Drew Holiday. Do you think they have any better chance of beating the Warriors this year?
Slight amount. Like, I'm not you. I don't think the Golden State Warriors are unstoppable. I think that the Spurs things go right for them, they could win a series against them. It's not likely. They're probably not going to be able to, but I think they could. And I think that if you're replacing minutes that Tony Parker and actually Patty Mills isn't bad right now, but if you're replacing minutes like Mills and DeJounte Murray and that with Drew Holiday minutes, yeah, like that's better. You're gonna have a better chance. You could put that guy on. You could put Drew on Klay Thompson and said chase his ass around for the whole game, and that would be better than anything they have right now to put on him.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, if you increase your chance to win the championship this year by 5%, 10%, you know, 15%, whatever, and all you do is give up guys that really cost you nothing and you know that you'll be able to develop more down the line, like, I don't know. I don't know if that, I mean, you lose Jonathan Simmons, and then so what? You just develop Kyle Anderson more, and we know he'll be fine. Or like I said, Davis Bertans, who the other night had something like 23 points on 7 shots or something ridiculous. Like, they'll just put in whoever, and they'll be fine. So, yeah, go get a guy who maybe in your system could move the needle even more.
So I have to bring this up just because this is the Spurs, and it's crazy. Do you realize that, and including Manu Ginobili, who is shooting 39.8%, so I will round him up to do this. Do you realize that they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 players on their team who are shooting 40% from the field, from 3?
Yeah, and then Davis Bertans is at 39.4.
And Kyle Anderson's at 38.9.
So, yeah, basically you got 10 39% or better three-point shooters. Of course you do.
Oh, my God.
I mean, when you got Pau Gasol and Aldridge taking 2 a game and they're at about 50%, of course they are. And, that's what I'm saying. Drew would go there. He'd become a 42% three-point shooter all of a sudden, plus give them better defense and a little bit more athleticism and length. So why not give up? I mean, if you're them, why not give up either Kyle Anderson or Simmons and then, you know.
But what do they have to offer besides, like, do you think people are, so the Pelicans. Let's just make this a trade. I'm offering, you are the Spurs, I am the Pelicans, and I'm saying, Drew Holiday, what will you give me for the magnificent Drew Holiday? He's like a Ferrari to Tony Parker's Yugo.
Say Ferrari in that voice again.
No.
Ferrari? Oh,
it's my seductive selling voice.
Good God.
You can see why I've never been in sales.
Or never been seductive.
That's true. So, what are you offering me?
I mean, the hard part would be making the salaries work, but I would basically give you DeJounte Murray and Jonathan Simmons, and then, like I said, the hard part is making the salaries work, but, you know, they also have the draft rights to, like, 14 different guys, including Nikola Milutinov, who was a first-round pick back in 2015. You know, it might be somebody you might be interested in, but they're flush. So Milutinov is a 22-year-old center. You know, looks like he's solid in the Euro leagues, whatever. So they could give you a couple of young guys like that. The harder part, like I said, is making the salaries work because they don't really have anybody that's not in their rotation that they could just give you salary-wise. So that would be something that would have to be fudged around maybe with the third team or doing some other things. But I would think basically something centered around DeJounte Murray and a guy like either Jonathan Simmons or Davis Bertans would be fair.
Okay. And you would take that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my thing with the Drew Holiday trade is not only who I'm getting back, but I want to make sure it makes me worse this year. I think the best thing the Pelicans could do in any trade is improve their draft pick. I think us getting something really good for Drew or Tyreek from another team is kind of blind hope. But what you hope to do in the trade is make your own pick better, which should be counted as part of a trade. So, I mean, if the Pelicans sell and go from, let's say, in the universe in which they don't sell, they end up with the 9th pick. In the universe in which they sell Drew and Tyreek and they get the 3rd pick, I mean, that's a massive difference. And to me, that's going to be worth more than anything they get back in the trade anyway. So that's a big part of my goal.
Okay. First off, I want you to know I'm holding out for Kyle Anderson, because any time I can get a guy named nicknamed Slow-Mo, I got to do it. And second off, like the secretly what you're doing here is you're making it so Chris Paul can't go to the Spurs, because I know that's you. That's your prediction, is that Chris Paul this offseason is going to leave the Clippers and go to Spurs. If Holiday's already there, like, aren't they just going to, you know, extend him?
Yeah, and I mean, again, I made that prediction before knowing the new CBA. Chris Paul basically put himself in a position to rob the Clippers blind because of the new CBA, and he can't get that same deal with the Spurs. So I think Chris Paul might just take the money and then force his way out via trade in a year or two if the Clippers haven't won by then. So I think San Antonio might think that too and just get the sure thing in Drew.
Yeah. Okay. We spent way too long talking about one team.
Yes is my answer.
Rockets, are they sellers or buyers?
I would say they would more likely buy, but I doubt they do anything except for maybe upgrade Corey Brewer.
Okay. So pretty much probably stand pat. Because what are you going to get for Brewer?
They would give up their first-round pick if the right small forward came along, but there's no small forwards on the market.
All right. Clippers? They're always buying. Can they buy?
Not really. They don't really have the salaries to match or the assets to give.
And they're not trading Austin Rivers anywhere, that's for sure. Can't lose that guy.
He's too good.
Utah Jazz.
I think they would package guys for a superstar, but that ain't happening. I think they stand pat.
Yeah, I don't see any way that they could be buyers because they are desperately afraid of the bills that are coming due pretty soon here.
Yeah, but if they could, like, turn Favors and Alec Burks into one solid rotation piece, I think they would, you know, a really good player, they would do it, but...
Yeah. You know. Thunder.
I think they would be buyers. I just don't know if they have the assets, but I could see them buying.
Okay. Yeah, I have them on my buy list, too.
Would a deal centered around Cameron Payne and whatever else for Drew Holiday, would that not make sense for both teams?
I'm not sold on Cameron Payne, really. I know, actually, that was the core piece for the core of the trade that they were going after with Sacramento for Rudy Gay before Gay got hurt. Was Cam Payne and some other filler for Gay, and the Kings were balking at it. I don't know. Like, I can't honestly say I've seen Payne play except for in one game. So he's always been out of the rotation or injured whenever I've seen them play, really. So is he anything worth anything? Is it just a throw in?
I mean, he's a guy that you take a shot on because you don't want to sign Drew Holiday to $24 million anyway, so why not give this guy a shot and see how he does? I mean, like, something like Payne and Roberson, who's lost all of his confidence out there and, you know, whatever. You could take a shot on guys like that, and then if they don't pan out, what have you really lost?
So they're running Drew, Oladipo, and Westbrook?
I mean, you rotate those guys, and then, yeah, when you want to play small, you could play. I mean, there's enough defense and length and quickness between those three guys. Can they cover LeBron or Kawhi? No, but can anybody on that team now anyway?
Right.
So you run those three guys out there. You're ultra-fast, athletic, and long wingspan. You have a lot of ball handlers on offense. I mean, think of those three with Kanter and Collison, or not Kanter and Adams. That would just be an obscure lineup, but it would be interesting in some ways. But yeah.
Okay, so Memphis Grizzlies. You think they're buyers?
No, just because they don't really have the tools, but they're not, or the assets, but they're not selling either.
Right. Denver Nuggets, buyers?
Yeah, I think especially now, I think that
you think
eighth place is theirs.
You think that they're going to buy, so let's say, a medium-level veteran, or you think they're going to try to go for a really important player?
I think they're going to try for the really important player, but I think those guys are hard to get now, but...
Jrue Holiday for Nurkic, you think that's a possibility? That was my little fantasy the other day.
So, wait, which one's the good one?
So Jokic is the one who's playing now. Nurkic was the one that 2 years ago was the darling of the analytics world, and he has been beaten out by Jokic.
Yeah.
But beaten out, he has still got a PER of 17. He still rebounds the ball very well, even if he's not the most efficient scorer. So he just doesn't – he can't play next to Jokic. He's a true center. So
yeah, I just don't know if – again, are we just going to get another center to give to this team that they're not going to be able to utilize? Or do you think that this coaching staff could utilize somebody like that?
So
it just has to be the right true center.
Here is my 100% I fully believe this. Yes, because I watched Omer Asik get so many opportunities as a dunking around the rim center and flub all of them. And I've watched Ajinsa have many, many opportunities around the rim and flub all of them. I am 100% certain that we could get plenty of offensive opportunities if we had a guy who A, could catch, and B, could finish through contact.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd want him to take back Ajinsa too, but I'd be more than happy with that trade.
Okay. I do think the Nuggets are just general buyers, and I think their biggest hole right now is point guard. Like, Moutier has been a disaster again. And what other point guards on this team? Like, Jamal Murray's not a point guard. He's a shooting guard.
They got Jameer Nelson, baby.
They have Jameer Nelson, who's 752 years old.
Yeah, but that's in dog years. I
I don't think it's even in dog years.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that would be interesting. Again, now you're just putting another guy into our crowded roster. Like, we can't even get Montajunas minutes anymore. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, just so much garbage has to be cleared out. And they need to have a clear 7, 8, 9 guys who are better than 10, 11, and 12. Now you're just adding another big guy into rotation that I don't think this coaching staff would be able to fully utilize. But
okay. So Portland Trailblazers.
I think they would love to buy, but again, now they just have all these overpriced players.
All of those contracts are awful. Like, it just in a void. Allen Crabbe for 17 a year. No. Myers Leonard for $11 million a year. Not a chance. Like, Evan Turner for 17.5 a year. No thank you. Nobody they signed this offseason except for CJ McCollum, who they extended at $20 million a year. And even that's like on the edge. Like, I like CJ McCollum. I don't know if I like him that much. I probably would do it, but you know, it's one of those, oh God, it's going to hurt to do this kind of moments.
I think Harkless would get that contractor better again on the open market. I think he's worth $9 million.
Yeah. So but that's the only one they did. That was even reasonable.
Yeah, no, I think they have to trade McCollum. I think he's a fantastic player.
Okay.
I think I saw him play for a couple games when Lillard went down, and it made me think that if you got him to the right team, he could take, not in the playmaking role, but just in the scoring role, he could take that James Harden type of leap where if he's the guard, he could be a 28, 29 point per game scorer on, you know, and efficiently as well.
Wow.
I mean, you're talking about a guy who's shooting 42 from three. He shoots 51% from two, and he's almost a 90% field goal shooter. He's your 50, 40, 90 guy. Like, he's a fantastic. And then when Lillard went out, he just went absolutely insane. I think he could be. So my exact comparison for him is a taller, better shooting Isaiah Thomas.
Okay.
Where if you made him the guard the way that Isaiah Thomas is now, and he's not splitting it the way that Isaiah Thomas used to, if you made him the guard, imagine having Isaiah Thomas, who I know you listen to the same podcast I do, everybody thinks he should be the Eastern Conference All-Star guard starter next to Kyle Lowry.
Yep.
So you take that same guy, make him a little taller and a better shooter. Like, look at McCollum's shooting from mid-range. He shoots about 50% from mid-range. He shoots 42% from three.
And he did that in college, which is why I loved him.
Yeah, exactly. I still can't believe Mason and I battled in C.J. McCollum versus Trey Burke in our six-pick tournament, and he beat me with freaking Trey Burke. People just don't know. But yeah,
Wait. Burke had a good game like 3 weeks ago.
Oh, my bad. Mason should have won then. But no, I think McCollum could be absolutely fantastic. And I think he could be that kind of guard where Isaiah Thomas, I don't even put him in a position. He's just a guard. And I think McCollum could be the same thing, just bigger and better shooting. So I would trade for him in a heartbeat. And I think that's Portland's move as well.
But you don't think that he's not? You're not saying that they would trade him to us. We don't have anything that they want to make that team better.
Oh, I think I would happily do. I mean, Drew Holiday's people would have to talk to him. But if you're Portland, why would you say no to Drew and New Orleans's first round pick?
Okay.
I mean, Drew Lillard backcourt. Even though McCollum is way better than Drew. A Drew Lillard backcourt might be better than a McCollum Lillard backcourt just because it balances it out and, you know, gives you the defense and lets Lillard guard the worst player every night. Plus that first round pick. Now you're guaranteed at least one lottery pick, probably two. I think that would be, and if I'm the Pelicans, I'd do that. I would even throw Diallo in there. Wow. You know, I would throw anything else other than Buddy.
You're all in on CJ, huh?
You've just got to get one of those elite scoring, playmaking guards or wings in this league. Like, name a team who doesn't have one of those guys that is successful.
Spurs.
Like, Spurs have Kawhi Leonard. Did you see what he did against LeBron?
Yeah,
I said
a guard
or wing.
I don't know if he's really that much of a playmaker.
Oh my God. You missed the Spurs-Cavs game last night, didn't you?
I didn't watch it, now.
Where he went for 41 against LeBron and locked the bet. Kawhi, I mean, we talked last week about who you'd start a franchise with, Davis or Kawhi. I'm starting to think it's a no-brainer, and I was just biased. Kawhi's beyond amazing. But yeah, you have to have that super elite attacking guard or wing. So, yeah, I would do almost anything to get it. And you put McCollum and AD on the same team, and you just go from there. So, yeah, I would do that in a heartbeat, and I think it would make a lot of sense for Portland as well if Drew's people talk to Portland and
he's willing to say.
Yeah, basically for the same price, maybe even a little less than that extension you just gave McCollum, you could keep Drew. So from their point of view, they get a little bit better of a fit. They get more defense, less scoring, plus now they have another lottery pick.
So we spent a ton of time talking about the Portland Trail Blazers. Do you think that they're actually going to be selling, and of all the places that they were trying to sell, they would move McCollum? I
think that's the only thing that they could move for value. So would they prefer to move Crabbe and
Plumlee or, you know, Turner, of course they would. But as they call around, they're going to see none of those guys have any value. And then somebody like McCollum has a ton. And then they have to look in the mirror and say, can we win with the Lillard-McCollum backcourt? And if they're honest with themselves, they say no. If they were really at balls, they would trade Lillard. But you can't do that to that community. The community will kill you. So I think if they were smart, they would trade McCollum. But because people value their own stuff and, you know, are optimistically buy whatever, they won't. But that is definitely the smart move.
Okay.
No doubt in my mind.
I do want to mention that after years of tormenting ourselves, Aminu is down to 26% from three-point range.
He always sucked. The hardwood proxy or whatever that idiot guy is, he has like, Aminu has like one good game out of every six, and that idiot puts out 10 tweets, and then everybody thinks, oh, Aminu's doing good, and he doesn't tweet about the nine that Aminu sucked in. Aminu has always sucked. He has been the Xavier Henry, but just for a longer span, where Xavier Henry had a couple of good games and all Pelicans fans are like, oh, why do we let him go? And then it fizzled out. Aminu has always sucked. I don't care what Hardwood Proxism or whatever other idiot blogger said. He always sucked.
He's still a good rebounder. He's always a good rebounder.
Good for him. So is Reggie Evans. Where's he?
He's probably grabbing nuts somewhere.
Lucky guy.
That's what he does. All right. Next, the Kings. We've already talked about them. They're buyers. Just not much to buy with. Timberwolves. If you called up, and I was just like playing with this in my head. If you called up Thibodeau, who is, I would assume, moderately win now as because he's coaching as well, and offered him Drew for Chris Dunn, you think there's any chance that would go down?
I don't know. That one would be interesting. I think maybe if you also take Pekovic off their hands and, gosh, what else can you give them?
Well, Pekovic is retired officially now, I think. I don't know if you could trade his contract anymore.
Who has to pay him? Yeah, I don't know.
Have to probably take Jang, maybe. Like, he's got a contract that would match.
Yeah, but they could get value for him. I'm trying to figure out.
Nemanja Bjelica, his contract, I think it's like $5 or $6 million.
I'm not trying to figure out how to make salaries match. I'm trying to figure out negative assets that they would dump onto us.
To give us Chris Dunn. So we say that. I say that, but like, first off, it's intriguing just because Chris Dunn was highly sought after. The dude is averaging 4 points and 2 assists a game with a 7.9 PER. There's a reason, like this, and this is a guy who was supposed to come into the league just like Buddy Hield. Ready to go. He was a junior. He was physically a match for NBA players, supposedly. Would it be smart to go after this guy? Tyus Jones is well outperforming him.
Yeah, I don't really... I mean, to me, whatever your evaluation of him was 6 months ago should be what you go on. Not a small sample size in the NBA where it's a steep learning curve, especially for that position. So if you liked him going into the draft, that would be my evaluation of him. I wouldn't even look at how he's played so far in Minnesota. That would mean nothing to me.
Okay.
But the bigger thing with all this is, you know, if you're the Timberwolves, you only make that trade if Drew says, I'll resign. And this is the thing I want to say to all fans, and, you know, I see this stuff everywhere of, you know, well, Drew and Dell need to sit down and talk, and Drew needs to tell Dell his intentions, and then Dell, that's not how any of this works. Like, I know people really think that it's that simple, but, okay, I'll let you make the case for the idiot fans who always say this stuff, and you try to tell me, what does it benefit Drew 1 ounce to say anything to the Pelicans and promise them anything, or any team that he happens to be on for that matter? How could it do him any possible good to make any absolute promises right now about what he's going to do in the offseason.
Maybe he really hates the idea of being traded and sent somewhere else to another team this season.
So he so you're saying he should lie, or he should lock in for the next 4 or 5 years because he doesn't want to be traded somewhere else for the next 3 or 4 months.
So you're saying make the argument as to why he would lock in with us, or because here's how I see a conversation going. Hi, Drew. How you doing? We just wanted to see what you were thinking about next year ahead of time. Just have a conversation with you that's open. And if he come and we really want to keep you here. We want to keep you here for the next 5 years. We would love to re-sign you this offseason. But if you're not willing to tell us that you're going to probably come back, we're going to have to trade you now and get something back for you. That's how this business works. We have to do that. Sorry. If you're willing to say, hey, you're going to come back this summer, we'll ride this out this season and hopefully we can come to a great agreement. And you can have that kind of conversation and probably have much more in-depth conversation with his agent.
No, you can't. See, that's what all fans think that those conversations are like. I'm telling you, that is not close to how any of those conversations would go. Because from Drew's point of view, he would honestly say to you, I'll tell you exactly what the player will honestly say. And then you tell me what you would say as the GM. So you come up to me and you say that, and the player will say, well, I honestly really like it here. I love my teammates. I love my home here.
Right.
But I can't promise you right now that I'm going to sign that deal. I'm going to go and see what else is out there. Just because I've never been a free agent before and I want to explore that process, but I could honestly tell you, I love this city and I love it here. I love AD. And that's all I could tell you. That's what will happen in that conversation.
Exactly.
100 out of 100 times. Okay. So then what you just gleaned from what I just said, do you trade me or not?
Well, that's exactly like I would trade you, but that's me.
But
it doesn't guarantee anything. Like, right, the only way you're actually going to guarantee anybody is if you have an actual extension. Or
if you have an actually winning team that is right. Actually a desirable franchise. But, yeah.
Because, like, to be honest here, we can say all the stuff about these prearranged agreements, like the Portland thing you were talking about. They have Drew's guys talk to Portland and say, we'll stick around. We'll stick around. But you know what? There's always the Carlos Boozers of the world. Carlos Boozer, who they let him out of his contract that he would have paid him $700,000 the next year. And he had a handshake agreement behind the scenes with the owner of the Cavaliers at the time. And as soon as he was out of that contract, he took the biggest contract that was put in front of him, which happened to be a Utah Jazz offer, and he was gone.
Right, but people think that these players are these master manipulative, deceptive. They're just really emotionally immature human beings. I mean, can we see it any better than DeAndre Jordan? Did he have this great master plan to lure Mark Cuban into giving him this big offer and then making him look stupid at the end? No, they're just little kids. Like, they're not great businessmen or smart men. Most aren't. I have met many NBA players. They are not people that if you knew them outside of their profession, you would think, wow, that's a really intelligent or emotionally intelligent human being. They're like little kids.
I agree 100%.
Don't know much else.
Which is why the LeBron James and Chris Paul and what they've been, Dwayne Wade and what they've been doing to manipulate the money in these CBAs, like that's unheard of. That's crazy.
There's a couple smart ones that definitely stand out, but really these are just really emotionally insecure guys who go out there and this person tells them on this day when they feel the worst about themselves that they're the greatest and they promise that they're going to be the center of this and that. And, look at the scoreboard in Madison Square Garden. This will be you every night. And then Drew Holiday really does love it in New Orleans and he had every intent of coming back, but man, Madison Square Garden's really cool and my brother's here and they got me a really nice cake and all these things that people think happen, they're just a bunch of little kids who, you know, wind up getting lured by the next guy. So having my point is having that conversation with Drew Holiday is absolutely pointless, because with a gun to his head, he couldn't tell you which team he'll be on next year. So why, you know, why in the world is he going to tell you? He doesn't know. His answer will be exactly what I told you, regardless, and it's not going to give you any information about whether he'll re-sign with you or not, because he has no incentive to say, yes, I 100% will sign. He'll tell you he loves you, and that could be honest, probably is honest, but he's going to explore things. So it's pointless to have that conversation. Either you trade him or you don't.
That's true, though I will say that there probably are some players in certain situations who will just tell you, no, I'm not coming back.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah, Aaron no, Gordon. Tyreek Evans will tell you that to your right. face.
Yeah.
If Dell Debs went up to Tyreek today and said that same thing, Tyreek would tell him, I don't really love the way I've been treated here. I'm going to look for a better opportunity this offseason. No doubt in my mind. But Drew Holiday won't say that.
Right. Okay. What were we talking about? Timberwolves, because I did the done thing.
Yeah, but that's even my point with the Timberwolves, is if they went back door and then they said, hey, Drew, you know, we're looking at trading for you. We just need to know that you'll want to be here next year. He'll give them that same answer, and then why would they give up Dunn for a guy who gives them that answer?
Yeah.
So that's why it's going to be really hard to trade Drew for something of quality, because I think there might be only two or three teams that he says, yep, I'll re-sign that contract no matter what. I won't look anywhere else.
Yep. So. And this is the perfect time to bring it up. We didn't talk about it a little bit earlier, but Zach Lowe floated the Reggie Jackson for Drew and the Pelicans first-round pick. I don't know how many people I saw just foaming at the mouth mad that the Pelicans would give up a first-round pick with Drew for a purely average guard at best with Reggie Jackson. And A, I don't like Reggie Jackson. I wouldn't trade anything for Reggie Jackson, honestly. But like, the idea there is Drew can walk the summer and you have nothing. And if you can at least get a locked-in, decent contract guard who's going to help you at least as well as Drew is, like, you might have to give up something good like your pick, which is why you threw it in for McCollum.
Well, yeah, for a good player, but see, what I would do is today I would go to Drew. I wouldn't have that stupid conversation about, are you going to be here? I would say to Drew, hey, Drew, you know, we're uncertain. We're looking at rebuilding. We want to send you somewhere you want to go. Can you give me the teams that if we traded you there, you would tell them or you would want to re-sign with them? And he might say, yeah, there's nobody. I want to explore free agency. He might say New York. He might say L.A., you know, whatever teams. And then I would explore conversations with them, basically telling them, hey, look, you're not just trading for him for 4 months. You're trading for him for the next 4.5 years. But that would be the only conversation I would have with Drew, is I'd ask him where would he want to go and where would he be likely to resign if we traded him there. And then I would just explore trades with those teams.
So do you think Wolves are buyers?
Yeah, I don't think Thibodeau wants a seventh overall pick. Okay. I don't think he has any desire for that.
Okay. Dallas Mavericks, this is the one that was hardest for me. I honestly don't know what Cuban would rather do. Give because he's in striking distance to the playoffs. There's no question about that. If Dirk can stay healthy, they've got as good a chance as anybody in the Western Conference to be number 8. And he's got Dirk. And maybe he wants to give Dirk that moment. It's possible. Maybe he doesn't care and he's ready to tank.
So to me, it would come down to this. What do you think Dallas is more likely to trade? Their first-round pick or Wes Matthews? And whatever you answer that question, whatever your gut tells you is more likely of those two and those two things only, then that'll tell you if they're buyers or sellers.
I would say it's first-round pick.
Okay, so then you think they're buyers.
Yeah, what would you say?
Yeah, I would say because of Carlisle, I don't know. Has Carlisle ever really went through a rebuild?
No.
So
over in Detroit with a pretty good team.
Yeah, I could see them. I could see them being buyers, and I could see that pretty easily.
Okay, Phoenix Suns.
Sellers, but it'd be somebody like
Tucker.
It'd be somebody like Brandon Knight, PJ Tucker. I think they're starting to love the pairing of Bledsoe and Devin Booker.
Lakers
definite sellers, because their clear path is to keep that pick one more year.
Yep. Okay.
If they could do that, yeah.
So in the West, we ended up with four teams that we thought were buyers.
And how many in the East?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, plus the Cavs if you wanted to consider them buyers, even though they have no assets.
I just realized I missed a very simple Dallas Buyers Club joke. I'm very upset now.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You don't know what Dallas Buyers Club is?
No.
Okay. Whatever.
Now I feel like a loser. I'm not on the in joke.
I mean, it was just a movie that Jared Leto won a Best Supporting Actor Oscar for, but Matthew McConaughey, none of this ringing any bells?
No, I didn't watch it.
All right. Well, whatever. I missed the joke, so I'm more disappointed than you are.
So, just as a general philosophy, is the reason why the West has less buyers because the Golden State Warriors are sitting right there?
I think it's because they're already pretty well constructed. I really do. I think, like, a team like Utah is constructed well. A team like the Clippers are pretty much maxed out. Like, these teams are pretty much are what they are, and if they're good, they don't really have stuff to give up to buy even more. Like, a team like Houston, I think they're fine. So I think it's actually because they have more polar teams. They either have teams that are really good or really bad, and the East just has a bunch of crap in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah, and all of those guys are hoping that they can become the clear, well-constructed Rockets, Clippers, Jazz kind of position. They want to be the Atlanta Hawks of the past 10 years.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I guess I'm more curious. We always talk about his contract, but I'm more curious how the other 29 teams just view Drew Holiday as a player. Like, I heard Lowe and Van Gundy on the podcast the other day, and Van Gundy was just like, Drew is really good, and Lowe's, yeah, and he's healthy. And I'm just sitting there like, am I an idiot? Which is always very possible.
No.
Am I an idiot and I just don't know how to evaluate? Or do these guys just not watch that much and they see what they like, but they don't watch as closely as me, plus they're remembering who he was when he was healthy? I can't figure it out. But then that night was the night that they went and played. Who did they play the night I listened to that pod? Who did they play the first game of this week? This
the
past
Magic?
Week?
The Atlanta Magic?
No, the game before that.
Not having a mind blank.
They lost.
Yeah.
The first game of this week. Come on, Ryan.
I can remember back that far?
It was a good team. Gosh, we are old. It was a good team, but we could have beat them. Ryan, come on, man.
It was the Indiana Pacers.
Okay, so the Pacers.
And they were right there. Three-point game.
And what was his box score in that? Because I remember he was just terrible.
I think he was like 0-7 or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and
his
I was
box
like...
score, against the Pacers, he was 4-9 with 11 points. 6-6 assists.
Yeah, and then the Magic, he was bad. But what was the game where he's bad but had a bunch of assists?
There was one game where he had 10 assists and like 4 points.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm just like... I mean, these are two guys who I really respect, and they like Drew, or that's what they said. I just don't get it. What am I missing? Because as just a pure player this year, I don't care what we gave up for him. I don't care about his past. Just this year, I have seen a bottom 10 starting point guard in the league, and maybe I'm missing something.
So here's what I would say about Drew. He is the ideal shape and size and skill list of a guard who can do anything. So when people go ahead and they make their team, they can say, in general, with a good team, you got your one great big man, one great wing guard. And then everybody is always looking for the guy who can fit next to your great guard. Like, everybody was always looking for the guy who could be next to Harden, or the guy who would finally take the shooting guard role next to Westbrook. Like, they're always looking for that guy. And everybody looks at Drew in every single one of those situations and says, he could fit next to my guy. He's big for a guard. He could shoot pretty well. He could make, you know, he's got a good assist number, so he can make plays if he needs to. Like, he is the ideal partner for almost anything you can come up with. Is he actually really great at anything? No, not really. But if he's not got to be the alpha dude, you could really sell yourself on him. And you did it earlier with the CJ McCollum. Send Drew up there to stand next to Lillard. Drew looks nice next to Lillard. He's the bigger guard. He can take the harder defense guy. He can handle the ball a little bit if he needs to. He could hit stand-up or stand-still three-pointers if he has to be that kind of spot-up shooter. He's that kind of guy. But if he's also got to be your lead ball handler, creative dynamo that is going to continuously crack a defense, that's not him. And that's kind of what we're feeling.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with all of that, but even outside of that, would you just say in a vacuum he's definitely better than Patrick Beverley?
I think Patrick Beverley is a special defender, so no, I wouldn't say that.
That's what I'm saying, and like, I think Beverley's considered, you know, a replaceable starting guard, a guy that you have on your team if you don't have much better, but, you know, a guy that I'm sure fans are always looking to upgrade, maybe wrongfully so, but whatever, but it's just because of the name. And, you know, Drew Holiday had made an all-star team and all these picks were given up for him. He's just given the benefit of the doubt that, oh, now that he's healthy, you know, he's good. I don't think health is an issue at all for him moving forward. I just don't think he's very good.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think, so I'll also say this. I think that in the right situation, like if you put him on the Spurs, I think Drew Holiday would be a very nice basketball player. And I think a lot of his issues would be papered over in ways that makes him feel like a lot better basketball player. And like Tony Parker for years, and anyone who's a Spurs fan who's listening to this who now hates my guts, I don't care. Shut up. Tony Parker was never even, in my book, a top five point guard. But there were Spurs fans who would fight you tooth and nail to say he was the first or second best point guard in the league. Tony Parker had all kinds of flaws to his game. He just played with a brilliant basketball team and brilliant basketball minds around him that made him only have to do the things he was really good at. So if you get Drew in your house and you're really good at basketball and you have all kinds of guys around him who can do a myriad of different things, Drew would probably suddenly start looking like, hey, he's really good at these three things, because those are the three things he's being asked to do, and he's not being asked to do the four things that he's not very good at. So,
yeah, see, I just don't think Drew has anything special. Like, Patty Mills has turned into a special shooter. Tony Parker had special quickness in his prime and the ability to be special in scoring in the paint. I don't think that there's anything Drew is special in. I think Pop would look at him and, you know, he'd say, okay, what are the three best things you do on offense? And as much of a genius as Pop is, I don't even know if he'd be able to answer that question, because I sure as heck can't.
Yeah, I bet he could. I could think of some things they could see him doing, but he's also asked to do so many other things that he's not good at that he looks kind of crappy at times.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's continue down the path that I have mapped in my head with this conversation that you probably didn't know anything about before we started this. So we've now gone through all of the Western Conference teams, and we basically turned this into a trade group podcast. But before I continue down that road, because that's what we're gonna complete this thing as a trade group podcast. Is there anything other than our pick on this team that would net us any sort of real draft consideration that beyond a second round pick that we would like to have. And obviously not Anthony Davis because he's untouchable. Everybody else.
I don't think so.
Buddy, could he get anything?
If you're a contender, you're not trading for Buddy because he's not going to be in your rotation this year. And if you're a team looking at the long haul and you're bad, I would think that you would have more faith in other guys in the top 10 this year than Buddy. Like, I think Buddy would struggle to be a top 10 pick in this upcoming year's draft. So based on that, like, the great teams wouldn't trade for him, the bad teams wouldn't trade for him. So I think you would struggle getting something of quality from him.
Okay.
Like, what type of team would really want Buddy? I mean, like, I know Atlanta would, but Atlanta would really want him and in a rebuild, and they might give you a Millsap or a Dwight Howard or whatever, but I don't know how much that helps your team, but that's what you would get, is you would get the teams that would be interesting would be these middling teams who would say, okay, let's sell and go the other way, and yeah, you might be able to get something like that from a team like that.
Yeah. So I think we have one other guy on this team who I think you could get a pick in the 20s for.
Who?
Langston Galloway.
That's insane.
I don't think so.
Tim Hardaway Jr. has been a better player, and they're struggling to get a high second-round pick for him.
Yeah, I've watched multiple shooting guards get transferred to teams that are picking in the 25th, 26th, 27th range every year, and they're willing to move those picks for this kind of guy. And again, the reason why they're willing to move those picks is because if you pay attention to my value of a draft pick, they're garbage. Like, you have like a 5% chance of getting anything out of that pick. But I think Galloway, because of the nature of his contract, how well he shoots from three, the fact that he's a little bit tougher than a lot of the other guards on this team, I think you could probably get that kind of pick for him.
So, I mean, you're talking about the teams that are up in that range. You're talking about, I mean, nobody really in the East, because Cleveland doesn't have their pick. Toronto would have no use for him. Boston would have no use for him. Atlanta, like I said, they already have Tim Hardaway. Maybe you're looking at the only team in the East that could possibly fit your criteria would be Washington. So yeah. Washington does have a terrible bench. So would they give up their pick, let's say top 20 protected, and a salary of a guy that they don't want, like a – well, there you go. Would they do Jason Smith and their top 20 protected pick for Langston Galloway?
I think they would. I think there are other teams that would consider too, especially there are going to be more guys who get injured between now and the Austin Rivers blows out his ACL tomorrow. The Clippers are going to be willing to move. I don't know if they have any draft picks left, but like that could happen to a number of teams.
Well, don't say a number. Give me more teams because I disagree.
So I bet you the Rockets would do that if Eric Gordon gets injured.
The Rockets would. I mean, you think if the Rockets dangled their first round again, this isn't just about whether it's a fair trade. It's the Rockets put their first round pick out there on the auction block, and you're telling me that Langston Galloway is
that's not never how it works.
That's exactly how it works.
No, it's no one. They do not dangle things out there. They have conversations. They kind of have ideas
of
what players
not
are available.
Literally dangle it out there, but it's not like you're trying to make a trade that's fair. In reality, what happens is the Rockets get in a room and they say, all right, well, we need a guard, and we're willing to give up our first pick. And then they put all the guys on the board who they would want, and then they start having conversations with those teams, and then they pick the best one out of those teams. And what I'm saying is, as they went around and talked to teams, it's hard for me to believe that Langston Galloway, who will probably be a free agent that offseason, would be the best guy that they would be able to get for their first-round pick.
I bet it's not true. Because they're going to be picking, like, 25th. Like, this isn't like an amazing thing. And I'm willing to be like, I know you're talking.
He's not an amazing player.
Langston Galloway shoots very well.
I think
people are aware of that.
I think that, yeah, sure, maybe, and then we got to take Corey Brewer back.
No, because Corey Brewer's got a long contract. There's no way that's going to work.
I mean, he has $7.6 million next year.
Yeah.
But I think you've got to do that. I don't think
nobody is ever going to take Corey Brewer back. That guy is such a negative, it's not even in the conversation.
And nobody's ever going to give you a first-round pick, even if it's a low one for the garbage.
I watched last year somebody give up a second-round pick or a first-round pick for Marco Bellinelli.
Yeah, during the draft, when they already knew what the pick was and that they didn't like anybody there. And
I am willing to bet you you could get a end of the second, the first round pick for him. They're just not valued that highly anymore.
Okay.
The teams that have them, just other than San Antonio, who's very smart because they always pick good players at that position, or they hit more often than they don't.
Yeah, and the Rockets don't. It's not like they got Montrezl Harrell at the top of the second round, Chandler Parsons. I mean, if you want to talk about a team that hits at the late first, Clint Capella.
That's why I said the Clippers first.
The Rockets have just, with that exact pick you're talking about, they've gotten guys like Clint Capella, Montrezl Harrell, Chandler Parsons, Sam Decker was a little higher, but same thing, whatever. They've gotten all those guys, and now they're just going to give it away for basically a non-needle-moving guy that they could get by other means. I don't believe it. I would like to believe it, but I don't.
Okay.
I think Tyreek might be able to get you like a young player that the other team has given up on. Like,
yeah.
I still think the best place for Tyreek, ironically, is Sacramento.
And you're still looking at McLemore there?
No.
Or Willie Cauley-Stein?
I would look at Cauley-Stein or Scal Labossiere. Scal would actually be my guy. But yeah, maybe you do, you know, Anthony Tolliver. I hope that he basically just has one.
So you think Tyreek Evans is still somebody that they could trade and get something for?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I think he's somebody that, you know, teams get excited about. And
you know what my take is? I don't think you can get Jack for Tyreek Evans. I really don't. So you and I disagree about that.
I don't think you can from a smart team. I think that there's enough dumb teams out there, teams that think that they could use him off the bench, and they see the games like what he had against Brooklyn, where he just basically carried the Pelicans to a win at Brooklyn. And they think that he could just be an X factor off the bench. But yeah, I think you could trade today Tyreek Evans for Costa Kufos and Scal Labissiere or Malachi Richardson, one of those young guys, or Willie Cauley-Stein or Ben McLemore, whichever one you wanted.
Okay.
So.
All right, so those are the kinds of players we're talking about making trades for. I just wanted to be sure we went through that so that somebody isn't like, hey, we could trade Tim Frazier and get something. Because Frazier was on the market and available to be re-signed by the Pelicans way after everybody else was signing backup point guards. There's a reason why he was not looked at that way.
Yeah, see,
much as I love him,
I'd be more curious about guys like Terrence Jones and guys like, can you get a second-round pick for somebody like that? Because you don't really have to make salaries work and whatever.
Yeah, but they have to approve those trades, too.
Yeah. Yeah,
those guys who are one-year deals, they have to agree, so, yeah.
Because I'm sure he so badly wants to stay on a team that'll be, what, like 18 and 35. So, yeah, those are the guys that I'd be more interested in, but it's pretty bleak out here, but I think we both agree that if you really want what's best for this team, even though you should always, well, you're told that you should always be rooting for wins. The best chance this franchise has is if they go something like 2-11 between now and All-Star break, right?
Yeah.
Like, ideally, Anthony Davis sits out, gets 100% healthy. Drew and Tyreek Evans just rack up huge numbers, but the team still loses. Is that your best case scenario between now and February 15th?
No, my best case scenario is that they win all 13 games, and they Solomon Hill plays like a $12 million player.
Okay.
That's a best case scenario.
This is a best case realistic. All right, last thing before we go, I want to get your opinion on this because before I quit Twitter again, I told you guys that I didn't think Montejunas was really going to play. It was stupid. They got another C-plus guy, and they're going to run into these situations where, you know, they just don't have the minutes, and they get another person mad. And then after the first two games, of course, people all came at me and, you know, he's playing a lot. See, you were wrong, whatever. Now, as always, it proves out that I'm right because I pretty much always am.
Yeah, that's right.
Why do you think – tell me what you think the logic of Montejunas has been where he came in, played huge minutes his first couple games, and now he can't seem to get off the bench even though they were all excited about the signing less than a month ago.
I think it's 100% how Terrence Jones is performing in a game and how they feel like matchups are. But what is he thinking? He's probably annoyed.
Well, I mean, so what? Terrence Jones was just terrible the first couple days Montejunas got here, so he got a bunch of minutes, and now Terrence Jones is too good to take off the court?
No, I think they had some minutes open. Terrence Jones wasn't playing that well, and they wanted a big player in Chicago and Brooklyn. Or not Chicago, but the mind blank. But against Brooklyn, they wanted another big player because we were getting killed on the boards. And then when they went against Indiana, you don't need that. When you're winning against Orlando, you don't need that. So I think it's matchup-based.
But in the first game against Brooklyn, when it was his third game here, he gets 19 minutes. And then
the second one, he got 12.
Right, but come on, Ryan, don't try that. He would have gotten zero if it was a close game. He had zero until they were down 20-something. That's like saying Diallo would have gotten minutes. No, so basically it's the same team, but the first time they played them, they were saying, oh, we want you in the rotation, first big off the bench, and then he's just sitting there chewing on his thumbnails in the first half until the game became an absolute blowout. So do they like him less? Do they, you know, did they think he would be better and he's just trailed off? Is he not, or you're just saying it's a pure matchup thing and we're going to see him playing 18 to 20 minutes again sometime soon.
So he is getting the Ajinsa treatment from previous years, where sometimes Ajinsa, you would see him play in 18 minutes and he'd be great. And then you see him play 6 minutes and he was awful and you'd only see him for the 6 minutes. And it's because that's all they want from that particular role. And they see Terrence Jones as the second big man next to Davis right now. Like, as far as I'm concerned, the actual, you know, two big men on this team that this coaching staff's going to play is Davis and Terrence Jones, and Cunningham's going to be a small forward next to Solomon Hill, who sometimes takes up some backup power forward, which means you've only got maybe 14 minutes to spend on the next big man. And sometimes Davis will be playing extra and get 38 minutes. Sometimes he'll be playing less and you'll get 20.
If you could go back in time and you were the Pelicans, would you sign Montejunas?
Kick the tires. I would honestly be trying to sign him for more than 1 year if I thought he was worth anything, but like, I don't understand, like, it's just another guy. If they maybe they think that there's going to be an injury issue here pretty soon. Like, it's just honestly they obviously have completely given up on Ashik and Ajinsa.
No.
So they needed a fourth big man. So they went out and got the best one that was available. I don't have a problem with that.
And you think that's what they told Montejunas? Or you thought probably. They told him there was plenty of playing time here and he'd be able to show off his value? And
I don't know how many offers Montejunas actually got. Like, he had already gone on a road trip to three different teams and they all said, yeah, he played well, but none of them offered anything. I guess he was going to show up at the Timberwolves next. But that's not a situation, like, if you're that guy, you're going to take whatever offer comes on the table. You got to start rebuilding your worth, because now the perception in the league is there's been three teams who have looked at your back and said, holy crap, I'm not touching that. Take whatever offer you can get.
Yeah. All right. Just wondering what you thought, because the optimist, of course, thought that after that first game or two, he was just one of the greatest signings. And again, it's always the same junk with this franchise. They just get a whole bunch of average players, and I think they have a new toy. They get all excited, and then they see the flaws in their new toy. So then they just go back to the old one, and then they get a little tired of playing with that, and then bring out this other toy. But it's because all the toys that they get are just Walmart crap toys. And that's why they keep trading them in and out. And, you know, I just think it's pointless. And I think it actually hurts your team and your chances for development when you do that. I'd rather just have them get rid of all these C plus toys. And let me just watch Diallo make a ton of mistakes from March, you know, through April. I really couldn't care less to have another Demo or Terrence Jones or any of these guys on the team. Get all that junk out of here and just let me watch Diallo run up down the court and make stupid mistakes and learn the rest of this year. But probably won't happen.
So before, because you short-circuited me, I did have one last thing to rattle down, and you tell me if any of these teams you think would want Drew.
Do you know the Indian? And now you brought up Short Circuit. You know the Indian guy in Short Circuit was played by a white guy? Just in, they painted his face?
No, but it's been so long since I've seen that movie, I can't remember.
It's pretty messed up and racist, man. 2017 America would not tolerate that. So I'm just putting awareness out there, but go ahead.
So we did the Eastern teams that were buyers. I'm just going to say their names, and you tell me yes or no if you think they would be interested in Drew. Raptors?
No.
Wizards?
No.
Pacers?
Yes.
Bulls?
Yes.
Pistons?
No.
Bucks?
Maybe. I know that's a cop-out, but maybe.
Knicks?
Yes.
Magic?
No.
76ers?
Yes.
Okay, you had four teams there. Bulls, Pacers, 76ers, and the Knicks.
Yeah.
Which of those four teams could put the best offer down for Drew?
I think Chicago.
You've been on them for a while, so.
Yeah, I think for what I would want, Chicago, for what the Pelicans would want, maybe Philly. I think they could have some interest in Noel and just completely blowing people's minds by basically doing a Drew for Noel trade, which it would be on so many different levels. Just I wouldn't even know what to say.
So here's the thing. Like I've had that thought go through my mind a whole bunch of times. The one thing that there's still people who talk about it too. The one thing that's the major issue, the major blockage right now for that is they've been playing Joel and Noel next to each other. They like that. And since they've started doing that, they've played well. Like that is the basic starting point of them playing well so far this season, is those two guys getting minutes together.
I mean, Embiid's just playing well, period. But you also got to remember Simmons is coming back too.
Right.
So they're going to have to clear out front court room.
Do you think Simmons is a power forward?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, without a doubt.
You can't play him at small forward next to those two.
No, not next to those two. Maybe if you had another big that could shoot, maybe you could play him next to Saric and Embiid. But I think those three are their front court of the future. But no, you're going to have to clear out room anyway.
Okay. All right. So, got anything else to talk about?
No, that's it. Just, rooting for a bunch of losses this week and,
hopefully we'll come back and we'll have achieved that next time we talk. That'll get me excited.
Yeah.
If we were to win, so the games that we have this week, what game are the Pelicans taking? What do you want? What's the one that they're most likely to win? So they're home against Cleveland. Then they're going to be home against Oklahoma City, and then they're going to be home against San Antonio. The Wizards, I guess, is the easy one, even though that'll be hard. So out of those three, what's the one that the Pelicans come out of nowhere and somehow surprise us and win?
Cleveland.
And why do you think Cleveland just rests a bunch of guys, or do you think it's actually a good matchup? Or
I think the Pelicans in the past have actually played Cleveland decently, and Cleveland has a tendency to not have their foot on the gas all the time. And the Pelicans can then sometimes surprise people that way. I don't think OKC will take, they don't take anything for granted. They're going to work really hard, and they are rebounding monsters. Although Adams is out now, isn't he? He's still in the concussion protocol?
Yeah.
That might be then, I might go AKC then in that situation. Because just Adams and Cantor, so far I've watched this team just get obliterated on the boards for weeks now in embarrassing fashion. And if Adams and Cantor are both available, OKC is going to just destroy us on that end. But if Adams out, there's a chance that they can take out OKC.
Yeah, so. I think that's the only one they have a shot against. San Antonio is awesome on the road.
And San Antonio is just going to pick us apart. That's what they do.
Yeah, I'm seeing an 0-4 week. I actually think they come out strong against Cleveland because Gentry yells at them and gets them fired up for a quarter, and then eventually Cleveland steps on the gas and beats them, and then the rest of the week they just keep getting worse and worse, and they go 0-4 this week.
Okay. All right. So thanks, everybody, for listening to the Depressing Podcast. We're going to officially change our name. We're going to now start calling ourselves Nope. Which actually works with the acronym that many people use.
Yep.
Hopefully we'll come back next week. And actually, before we go, I have one last question I really meant to ask you. Paul Millsap, if they traded for Paul Millsap tomorrow, is that enough to make them a definite eighth seed person?
No.
Okay.
Because this franchise will always find a way to mess something up.
Oh, God.
A terrible franchise. They're terrible, and it won't matter.
Oh, so depressing. Thanks, everybody.
'Happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m., and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.